Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to the latest edition of a Burr News Live interview. Joined today by Rada Tri-Sterling, who represented the Human Rights Commission, Mark Pettingill, and his junior counsel, Grant Sperling, who represented Winston Godwin and Greg DeRoche in the recent landmark ruling about same-sex marriage. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us in your busy schedule. I know you've got to shoot off to court probably this afternoon. But
now then, I'm afraid, Jeremy, but you're in different places.
Okay. Today, so. The government's not appealing this decision. Does that surprise you?
No.
Why?
Well, I think that, you know, I think the government took the position of letting it go to court to have it decided as it had done in other places. It was clearly a divided issue politically. And I think at the end of the day, perhaps quite sensibly, given, you know, what was going on with it politically, they thought, well, let's see, you know, how the court comes down on it, which is what had happened in other places. And I think that having got the ruling and looking at it, you know, from a legal standpoint, they've probably taken the position, as I would, that they'd be on a road to hiding if they appealed, and better not to.
The Preserved Marriage Group issued a statement yesterday. I'm going to read an extract. It said
our fans.
This is particularly pertinent to you, Rob, because it talks to the Human Rights Commission. Now, I know you want to speak personally. You're not speaking on behalf of them, but I still like your opinion. He said that the OBA government has not held the Human Rights Commission accountable, which wrongly claimed that same-sex marriage is a human right. We must remember that Bermuda's Human Rights Act falls under the European Convention. As a result, the Human Rights Commission has a mandate to uphold the convention and not to go against it. The European Court has ruled over six times that same-sex marriage is not a human right. Now, is that a red herring?
That simply false. And Preserved Marriage ran some of these arguments in court, and they were soundly and roundly rejected, number one. Number two, as you mentioned earlier, Jeremy, right now I'm speaking, any views I express now are my own views, not the views of the Human Rights Commission.
Yeah.
I believe that they'll be making their own...
I'm sure they'll respond to that.
Yeah. ...press release. It's wrong to say that the Human Rights Act falls under the European Convention. The European Convention sets a basic minimum standard of human rights, not the maximum standard, the minimum standard. And the European Convention of Human Rights applies to over 50 countries, not just to the countries in the European Community, but it expands beyond that. It includes Russia, Turkey, countries like that, where human rights aren't a very high priority. So the European Convention sets a very, very basic minimum. Many countries, particularly those countries in Western Europe, have human rights legislation and standards that are much higher than the European Convention. And in Bermuda, the same thing applies. Our Human Rights Act is not based on the European Convention. Our Human Rights Act is actually based on the Canadian Human Rights Act. So whilst it's true that the European Convention of Human Rights has been extended to Bermuda, that applies the floor, the basic minimum. Our Human Rights Act goes beyond the European Convention. And so in our arguments, we were not relying at all on the European Convention right. We were relying instead on the Human Rights Act, Bermuda Human Rights Act right, which are, as I said, premised on the Canadian legislation and go beyond the convention.
It's not the first time that Preserved Marriage are quoted, so it is a red herring.
Completely. I concur with everything that Rod just said. You know, we've kind of read it over and over again now. It seems to be their repeated mantra, and I don't know why they're not going looking at it properly or getting advice on it, but, you know, that's a position they've chosen to take. But, you know, candidly, it's patently false and it's misleading. You know, and that is from a particular group as they, you know, espouse to be, I find particularly disturbing.
You mentioned, you know, you think they take advice. Is there any legal recourse left open to Preserved Marriage to take this any further?
Well,
you're aware of it.
In open court, Preserved Marriage's counsel conceded that as an intervener, they had no right of appeal. And the reason why the government is not appealing is because any appeal is unsustainable. There is no way that they would get any lawyer who has even the most basic understanding of human rights law to tell them or to advise them that an appeal was likely to succeed.
So legally speaking, through the courts, through the justice system, is at the end?
That's certainly my view, yeah.
I mean, the fact is that every final judgment is capable of being appealed. There's an automatic right of appeal in relation to final judgments, not interlocutory judgments. So to say that there's a right of appeal is one thing, but first you'd have to get a lawyer to tell you that you have a good prospect of success, and then you would appeal.
Yeah, they have to get leave to appeal.
And not, the lawyer wouldn't say, well, you're guaranteed to win. He said, you have a good prospect of success.
Yeah.
And the government have no prospect of succeeding on an appeal, and that's what their internal lawyers and probably their external lawyers have told them, that any appeal would be bound to fail. And I can tell you that preserved marriage could not get their lawyer, I bet, to go on record and do what I'm just saying. I mean, taking off my client hat, I can tell you that there is no basis upon which I could give advice that appeal had a prospect of succeeding. And I would go further. I'd say it's bound to fail. I don't think that preserved marriage could get a lawyer to go on record and say, I believe that this appeal has a good prospect of winning, or it's likely to succeed. I don't think they could get a lawyer to do that.
Yeah, I doubt it. I would say, put your money where your mouths are and tell government, they say, the government should appeal and all the rest of it. Tell them that you'll foot the bill for the appeal. See how far that goes.
So if legal recourse is out of the question now, by the sounds of things it is, that takes us on to the parliamentary stage. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say, I was kind of confused because in my world, Parliament's sovereign. So when the judge then suggested amendments to the Matrimonial Causes Act and the Marriage Act, can you explain how that happens if Parliament is not sovereign, how the judge can recommend these amendments to this legislation that enshrines her ruling, that marriage is between a man, a woman, a spouse, a person, whatever? How does that work?
Well, I mean, I think sometimes it's a bit of a mistake for people to say, like, Parliament is supreme. Of course it is, but a lot of it is the kickback to Parliament in its wisdom created the Human Rights Act, which has primacy. So it's not quite as simple as saying, oh, Parliament's supreme and you don't have to amend this, you don't have to amend that. It cleverly, in this instance, falls under the umbrella of the primacy position. So it becomes like a bit of a house of cards. It's like once you accept that Parliament intended for the Human Rights Act to be supreme, that primacy has now been clearly recognized, as it rightly should have done, then that doesn't give the ability to come along and say we're going to change this, we're going to change that, or not, because those things obviously then would be unlawful because of the primacy of the Act. So that is a misconception in relation to this particular issue. Generally,
Well, Parliament's a lawmaker.
Of course, generally, but Parliament made the law, right?
Which gives
and
the Human Rights
primacy, and right. is embraced by then the Constitution, and by the European courts, and as Rod said, by the jurisprudence in other places. So it's very difficult to come along and say we're going to try and amend this or carve this out. It doesn't work like that, because you're going to look at it and say, well, no, we've already decided in our wisdom that the human rights. That human rights have to have primacy over anything else. And that's to stop out any loonies coming along down the road and deciding that they want to create laws that are, in contrast with that very significant and supreme position of human rights.
And to add to that, so when the court makes the sort of declaration that it does, it requires Parliament to do nothing further.
Mm-hmm.
And when the court makes this declaration, say, for example, that Section 15C of the Matrimonial Causes Act is inoperative, they are actually giving effect to the will of Parliament.
Right.
Because Parliament have given this power to the court and said, please, court, anytime any legislation accidentally gets passed going forward that is inconsistent with the Constitution or the Human Rights Act, or any older legislation which was passed that is inconsistent with the Constitution of the Human Rights Act, please, Parliament, you fix it. So it is our will that you fix it. So in doing this, the court is giving effect to the will of Parliament. So not superseding Parliament, but giving effect to its will.
So now I know the Charles Etta Simmons has invited presumably both of you guys to come back with comments on the legislation that she's drafted. What kind of timeline are we looking at here, do you think, before this is law?
Great.
I mean, really, it's a matter of days. The judgment has set out essentially the effect that the orders are meant to have, and the justice is going to take guidance from counsel on how that's going to be best affected. It's really a matter of a few days. Really.
Right. Okay. So
And this is a formality.
Yes.
The judgment takes effect immediately.
It does.
The form
of
order ties these things up.
It's we're just dotting I's and crossing T's. We're not going to rewrite the whole thing. Is there?
So I could go and get married if I was
if you want to. Jeremy,
right now,
I didn't know that was your persuasion, but I mean,
But if I wanted to, a gay couple could go and get married right now.
They could certainly walk in our view and go to the registry on a contracted marriage and begin that process, and the registrar would have no legal recourse at all to say, no, we're not doing it. They certainly couldn't start to say, we don't have the forms ready. Because we would say, like, well, put a line there and add spouse or whatever. So that's, you know, that's an easy fix. So that's not how it works. So the answer, as Rod says, it's, yeah, the law is done. Yeah.
So, again, we're talking about the parliamentary process, and there is this issue that whether Wayne Ferbert, who succeeded in the House and was defeated in the Senate, that brought an amendment to the Human Rights Act that said marriage between a man and a woman, that's it. Mm. Can he still do that?
Good luck.
But can he still do it?
I mean, sure, he can. Look, you can lay a private member's bill whatever you want to, right? I mean, I think that at this particular juncture, given the position that the government has taken, certainly given, we all know what my position is, even as independent, you heard, you know, from my colleague and partner, Sean Crockwell, legal partner, I should say, what the position is on that. And also, you've got absolutely, you know, members of the opposition that clearly stand on the side of right when it comes to human rights. So I think that he could try it on, but, you know, my assessment would be that it's on a road to a flogging if it comes back to the House.
Because it's quite an interesting one, isn't it, politically, because we're in an election. Yeah. Now, there was the non-referendum. Mm. It wasn't declared proper because it didn't got 49%. Yeah. But it was pretty clear from that only 31% of those turned up voted in favour of same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of constituency pressure, presumably, on these MPs if Mr. Ferbert brings back his amendment.
Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, look, it's silly, because, I always say this in regard to the referendum. You can't have a referendum on a minority rights issue.
Yeah.
That was the vote, that's what I said at the time. If you had done that during the 60s on civil rights in the US and said, oh, we'll have a referendum, you wouldn't have passed any of those things. It was because of the law came into effect that, you know, those significant changes came about, and it's the same here. So, like, having any referendum, and anybody that was sensible would look at that and say, well, A, it's non-binding, B, it's a minority rights issue, what's the point? You know, so you had, like, a core of people coming out and other people that just, you know, wouldn't have bothered. I mean,
but my point was, though, that there was a significant number of people who voted against same-sex marriage. So there could be constituency pressure on MPs if Wayne does bring his amendment forward.
I think, frankly, that, you know, Wayne, my good friend Wayne, being down there in the Bible Belt, he's got that pressure nipping on him, right? You know, he's a man who's been down there for a long time, and, you know, he's run the UBP, he's won there, he's run the PLP, run there. If he ran as independent, he'd probably win there. And that's because he's got a certain, you know, segment well locked down over many years. And, you know, he probably feels the pressure more from his constituency with regard to than anybody else. And I think his constituents are maybe one of those areas that, you know, are banging the table and saying that, you know, we don't want this. Still a minority rights issue. And, you know, we keep imploring people. You know, it's a simple approach, Jeremy, and it's been from the very beginning. And the case is a simple approach. The first question is, you know, are you human? Well, if you accept that as a yes, the next question is, do you believe that all human beings should have the same rights? If the answer to that is yes, and the right to happiness and love, then you're there. And we just keep inviting to people to say, like, you know, forget about the whole lifestyle of what you perceive as gay people, which they seem to get locked down in. About that and the issues of you know of this and that and what's involved with it. If they look at it as we'd invite them to do on the basis of dealing with human beings, which is what the Human Rights Act is, which is what the case was about. Whatever your feelings are, you might be homophobic, right, as many people are in this community. And if so, you still should have the intellectual ability to say, all right, I am, you know, I'm completely homophobic, I'm afraid of gay people, whatever, but on a purely human basis, I recognize that all human beings must be entitled to the same rights as every other human being. And what happened here was nobody has touched on or wanted to, especially us, and infringed on the rights of the church. You know, they have all of their rights protected constitutionally under the Human Rights Act, under the Marriage Act. All of their rights are protected, remain enshrined, and will always be protected, right? So I have never gotten what their fear is in relation to, you know, a certain segment of the society being allowed to enjoy the same right that they enjoy on a contractual basis. It's just, it blows my mind, you know, but it is what it is. You know?
And Jeremy, just addressing the sort of the question at the beginning of that, it's really important to note that, I mean, and Preserve Marriage have said repeatedly that they speak for the majority who are opposed to same-sex marriage, and that's just another one of their lies. They do not speak for the majority. That in the referendum, less than one-third of the Bermudian population, less than one-third voted against same-sex marriage. So the referendum result doesn't tell us what the majority want. The referendum result, which was ineffective because so few people voted, but all it tells us is that one-third of the Bermudian population is against same-sex marriage. The other two-thirds are either in favor of same-sex marriage or relaxed about it, or don't care about it. And if they get married or not, they don't care. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people who, if you ask them, would they come out on a march for same-sex marriage? They're like, no, you know, I don't like gays. I'm not going to march for them. But if they want to get married, I don't care. As long as I don't have to marry them, I don't care. Right. I think the majority of the Bermudian population it does not oppose same-sex marriage. Preserve Marriage and their group represent a minority, a noisy minority, and a minority whose views may be respected, but what they cannot do is dictate to the rest of us. And they cannot force their religious views on those of us who don't share their religious views.
Yeah, I mean, that has to be right. You know, the churches are head-knocking one another. Different types of religions are always constantly, you know, in conflict with one another. And those tend to be respected. Religious beliefs are respected. This is another thing to say, your beliefs are different to my beliefs. And you know what? I don't want to go to your church because of what your particular ethos or dogma is. That's fine, but I respect your right to do that all day long. You know?
I don't want to flog a dead horse, but I want to carry on with this Wayne Ferber thing. Okay, he's mildly hypothetical, although he has said he's deeply considering it, I think were his exact words.
Deeply considering.
Yeah. If he does succeed and a couple get married now, what happens to them?
Good question, isn't it? I mean, I think that, you know, what we'd like to see is as many people putting in their applications as soon as practicable.
But if I get married now and he passes the amendment to the Human Rights Act?
The answer to that question is that any marriage that takes place, say, next week, all of those marriages will be legal. If in, say, 12 months' time, Wayne Ferber passed his amendment, and if it was, and if that sort of cancelled the position, it would only cancel the position going forward. Mm. So you'd have, say, the 100 people who got married in the next year who were legally married, but because of the way that the Amendment Act is worded, what would happen is that those people would be locked in because they would no longer...
So they couldn't get divorced.
Right? Which is bizarre. So they'd be now locked into something that people of opposite sex wouldn't have, because people of opposite sex have a right to get married and a right to get divorced, but they'd be locked in. So that Wayne Ferbert's amendment is bad on several fronts. And Mark can speak more clearly to the political issues than I can, but I would just find it difficult to believe that a majority of MPs reading the judgment of Mrs. Justice Simmons could actually now come to the conclusion that they could support Wayne Ferbert's amendment.
It's noticeable, actually, there's been no statement from either party so far as far as I'm aware.
No, other than the government saying they're not appealing. I think that's a pretty significant statement, because where do they go with that? They can't then decide, you know, they were represented, they've looked at it, they've taken legal advice, you know, they're not appealing. Well, now they turn around and don't support it. Yeah, so it makes a nonsense of it. Then,
let alone, I think the international embarrassment that you would have having
totally.
A Human Rights Act that has a preamble that says, "Where is the dignity of everybody respected?" Yeah. And then goes on to say, within that act, and by the way, gays can't marry.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
nonsense.
It would just be jurisdictionally embarrassing.
Cringely bad. You've already seen the reaction, Grant's quite right, from, you know, like people like Cunard and so on, saying we're so happy this comes on because gay people can get married on our ships now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reaction internationally from, you know, so many organizations internationally with regard to human rights and gay rights that we have seen. Like, we've all gotten, like, you know, hundreds of emails of support and congratulations and saying, you know, this is the right thing. And just, you know, yesterday I got it about because of the success here. Cayman is now looking at it, you know, and it is being pursued there potentially. So we got
they
to ask about that.
They do,
but it's like something that, but that again is something that, you know, that they're raising the flag to look at it because we have done it, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's been significant.
So how does this affect a Bermudian couple and a non-Bermudian who are married overseas? Is it recognized?
Yeah. A gay couple, you mean? Yeah. That's a bizarre thing, isn't it, Jeremy? That marriage, because of the immigration decision, is already effectively, you know, their rights have effectively been recognized because of the decision in Bermuda Bread. You know, that's it. It's the same thing we said, it was just a nonsense of what was falling on, because the rights of a gay couple to adopt a child are recognized because of the A and B decision.
So it's recognized, they would be recognized as being married here, because before they weren't.
Well, yeah, no, they wouldn't want to go on and get married here now. They're already married,
obviously,
you know. So that, like, everything has to fall into place sensibly, you know, because of how it goes. The law has to work in some sensible framework.
No, the law doesn't force a church into marrying a gay couple.
No. And stop. But, you know, people need to know that. We're not going to make you marry gay people in your church, okay? Nobody's going to try that on. I'd be the first to roll up. I think Rod even might, you know, and they defend the church if we got instructed. If somebody came along and brought a case, I think Grant would agree, and said, like, we demand it's our right to get married in, you know, whichever church, you know, is against that, we'd be the first to say, no, hold on a second. They're entitled to their fundamental religious beliefs, and you can't force your position on them. We'd take that case.
And that's an important distinction, that the church's rights have been protected, and none of the church's rights have been affected by this, because the church has a right to say, we won't marry you. What they don't have a right to say is that you can't get married somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think it's a fundamental distinction in the, without speaking too much of services, but there, we've heard about Kate Bakers in the U.S. who've been found to be acting in contravention of declared constitutional rights. That is very different. That's the provision of you're baking cake, you can't discriminate in that sort of way, whereas the religious freedom is protected. You don't have a protection on baking your cakes in this particular way.
For example, I mean, up to not long ago, within the Catholic Church, and I think it may still be in some places, you can't get, if you've been divorced, you can't get remarried.
Yeah.
And there are exceptions to it. Mm. So no one can force the Catholic Church to say, oh, you must marry all divorcees in all circumstances. The Catholic Church have a right to say, if you want to get married in the Catholic Church, you cannot do it if you are divorced. And in which case, those people could run along to, say, a Protestant church and get married in the Protestant church. The Catholic Church doesn't have a right to say, because we won't marry you, the Protestant church can't marry you.
Yeah.
And that's where the church's rights stop. The church's rights stop outside their church doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the same way that my rights stop at my front door, and your rights may commence at that point. And we have to all respect each other's rights. So I think it's possible to respect the church's rights without all of us having to live by the church's rules. Good heavens, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, and that's right, and I don't either, and don't. But, you know, the law has set out for a long time that division. You know, I mean, the Marriage Act 1944, don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
It
yes.
has contractual marriage in 1944. And, you know, so it's been around for some time, the recognition that it wasn't just about the church and religion. You know, the law's recognised that for a long time.
Some time ago, there was a debate in the House about passing legislation to allow civil union. Now, that wasn't passed. If that had been...
It hasn't been passed. No, no.
Well, it's been delayed or not. It's not on the statute. If it had, would we ever got here?
But that's the beauty of it. I mean, the reality is this, that the only reason... Well, a significant reason why we have same-sex marriage today is because of preserved marriage.
Yeah, thanks to preserve. Thank you, preserved
marriage. But for preserved marriage, we would not have same-sex marriage today, because here's what would have happened. The government were under pressure to pass civil union legislation, because under the European Convention of Human Rights, which establishes, as I said, the basic minimums, they were required to do so if they didn't already have same-sex marriage. The government looked like they were minded to do it, but preserved marriage put up such strong opposition, not just to same-sex marriage, but also to civil unions. Preserved marriage objected to civil unions, and it was their pressure that caused the government to stop. And because of that, this case was forced on. But for preserved marriage's objection to the civil union legislation, the civil union legislation would have passed, and this case most likely would never have come across, and we wouldn't have same-sex marriage. So thanks, same-sex marriage, or preserved marriage, I should say.
But I think, you know, as it stands now, we certainly are big supporters of preserved marriage, all marriages. So they might want to think about changing their name, because as the law stands, marriage includes same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
So really, the propagating of preserved marriage, I think we're all for it. You know, like it just, but it covers now same-sex marriage. So they might want to, you know, try to change the message a bit, or at least the title to it.
Arguably, based on the decision, it always covered
same-sex marriage. That's right. So it did. So hey, preserve marriage. You know.
Just one final question, because I know you guys are busy. But the judge, in her summing up, did make the comment about did make the comment about moving Bermuda into the 21st century. Is this a big step forward in that?
Yeah,
in your opinion?
That was awesome.
It was in her ruling.
Of course it is. I mean, you know, I think we submitted, write the final chapter in human rights, you know, and the 21st century was about it. This is where we are. You know, we made the point, I think, very, very strongly and pointedly, if I may say so, that, you know, that the world has changed. And we went through that kind of, you know, history. We have moved over the centuries to, you know, really becoming more human. You know, becoming more caring, becoming more loving. You know, we have evolved in a very significant way. And the rights of gays and the recognition that people are born gay, and, you know, that is the way that it is, I mean, in nature, you know, we have now come to recognize that. Just like we recognized, you know, issues of race, issues of, you know, women being able to have the vote, you know. I mean, just, you know, we have progressed. And this now has become... You know, in the last few years, a 21st century issue. I think it was, Grant, you'll recall the numbers, when Barack Obama went into office, I think there was 5 states that allowed, like, you know, gay marriage. 8 years later, they all did. You know, that's progress, that's a recognition of the human evolution, of the human development, I believe, of love and happiness. And that's the right way to go, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I mean... The world has changed and continues to change. On this particular issue, same-sex marriage, the evolution has been pretty fast in the last few years. But our approach to human rights continues to grow. I mean, up to a few years ago, in some countries, marriages between people of different races was unlawful. In the U.S. case of Loving against Virginia, that was only in 1967. In most, certainly many U.S. states,
they went to jail.
Interracial marriages were illegal, and Mr. and Mrs. Loving were given a prison sentence when they got married. That case went up to the Supreme Court, and it was the logic of the Loving judgment that the U.S. Supreme Court in 2015 in the Obergefell case relied upon, because they said humans are humans, and if you remove the word black or white for gay or same sex, the effect is the same, and therefore, if discrimination is bad, then discrimination is bad. If it's bad on the basis of race, on the basis of sex, on the basis of sexual orientation, then it's bad. And so our view of human rights continues to evolve happily, because if they didn't, then, you know, some of us would still be in chains.
Yeah.
Indeed. Hey. Gentlemen, on that note, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for everybody's support.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.